Hello, everyone. My name is Terry, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. My sobriety date is September 16th of 2004, and my home group is the Interaction Group in Jefferson, Louisiana. We meet on Monday nights, and we're a step and we're a big book and 12 and 12 study. And that will actually become relevant in a minute when I'm talking. I guess I'll start off by saying that how grateful I am to have the opportunity to come up here and speak about a topic at this wonderful convention. I've had such a good time so far here, and it's really powerful to be around so many people that are living this same way of life, you know, and to realize in this room right now that, you know, 80 years ago, we wouldn't be here. People like us would continue drinking to death until we got locked up, and there was no solution for people like us. But today, we are, we got a room full of miracles in a room right now, and that's a very, very special thing. And I'll start off by telling you a little bit about my story, and I'll get sober quick. I showed up to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because a judge ordered me to at the age of 18, and I'm grateful for that because there was hope that was planted in me, and I knew. One day, you see, I know everybody that's here from Louisiana, and I do appreciate everybody coming out from Louisiana. I'm sure they've heard me say this before, but I showed up, and it was a room full of guys. I was 18. It was a room full of gray-haired men, and I sat around that table, and I heard what they said, and I don't remember anything that they said, but I thought that at least I have a place to go when I get old like them, you know? And that was a real thought that I had at that age, and I could remember that thought. And what that really was the message of hope that they gave me, that these people actually had it together. And even though I did not think I was powerless over alcohol at that point, I didn't see my life as unmanageable, I knew there was a place to come one day. So let me get my bearings on time real quick. Okay. I hung around AA for a little while. I continued to drink at 18. I left, and 4 years later was when it really got bad for me. I had moved out on my own. I was out of my parents' house. I was in college, and things had progressed pretty quickly. I didn't do too well with the freedom of not having to come home at night and not having anybody looking over me. And what wound up happening to me was that, I didn't know how to let the night end, you know. It's probably a good way to describe it. It's the phenomenon of craving. I just did not know how to just end the night. And that caused me to, I guess, get arrested a couple more times, but eventually show up again in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where I want to get. So I'm trying to get out of my drinking into that. When I was, when I got out of jail the last time, my family was sitting around, and they were trying to get me to agree to go to treatment, to go to a detox hospital. And I finally admitted that I had a problem and I was willing to go. And on the way there, I remember riding in the car with my mom, and I was so sincere. And I would have passed at that point a lie detector test that I wanted to not drink again, and I meant it with every ounce in my body. And while I was in that detox hospital, they did a procedure on me there that said, you know, a few days later, the doctor sat me down and said, everything is out of your system. You're completely clear. You have nothing left. You're completely detoxed. You're sober. But I'm going to recommend you to go to, like, a social rehab, you know, go to a long-term treatment facility. And, do you know that while I was waiting in there, I actually decided to go to let me just say this. While I was waiting in that detox hospital, after hearing that I was completely detoxed and having just had told my mom that, you know, I had a problem and not wanting to drink ever again, I was manipulating ways to drink again. And that's the problem with me. That's the problem. You know, it's this time it's going to be different. This time I'll control it better. I just let things get out of control. I was young. You know, those things still play in my head today. When I was in that treatment facility that I went to, there was a, I had to work steps, and I had worked some steps in there, and I think I did some good work to begin. And 11 months in, I live in New Orleans. My sobriety date, like I said, September 16th, 2004. Hurricane Katrina came through August 30th, 2005. So I had 11 months sober when Hurricane Katrina came through New Orleans. And my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, we're both sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. We wound up, you know, just like everybody else from that area, going around to the different parts of the country. And I guess I had picked up my one-year chip while we were evacuated. And I wanted to drink more then than I had in a long, long time. And I started making this trip back to New Orleans. I had to work in, I was about 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon, in solid, just, you know, traffic the whole way. And I'm going to an apartment with my wife, not an apartment, a hotel room with my wife and her cat and a litter box. And I was waiting in this traffic, and I had road rage, and I was going home to this litter box and this one room. I had become very, very angry, very restless, probably homicidal, didn't understand why I was drinking. I mean, why I wasn't drinking. Nobody, I wouldn't even know anybody. New Orleans was so different. Why don't I just drink? And I had gone through, when we moved back, I had gone through the steps with the sponsor. And we sat down together, and we did exactly what it said out the book. We read, and when it said to do something, we did it. And, you know, for me, that was, that was the first time that I had felt like there was some semblance of, of permanence to recovery. That trip that we had taken when we were evacuated, my wife would say that this was, sometimes it was just today we're not going to drink, just for today. And that worked. It's a good tool. That was the first time when I had worked the steps, after, that I had heard the 10th step promise and really realized that this thing could be, a permanent way of life. And this is, a design for living for me today. I love what it says in the 12 and 12. It says, more sobriety brought about by the admission of alcoholism and by attendance at a few meetings is very good indeed, but is bound to be a far cry from permanent sobriety and a contented, useful life. That is just where the remaining steps of the AA program come in. Nothing short of continuous action upon these as a way of life can bring the much-desired result. And I do find that's true today. You know, I have worked with a sponsor. I have sponsees. I love to have between 2 and 3 sponsees in the book that I'm working with on a weekly basis. I find that to be, very helpful for my sobriety. I've been through the steps as a whole, numerous times in the program. I think anytime that I pick up a new sponsee, even though they might have some time, it's good to kind of, do a run through with them for me, because it's hard for me to help somebody if I don't know all the facts, And a good friend of mine used to say that, I can't be helped by anyone, until one person knows everything about me. And I do think that that's true. It's really important that my sponsor he's actively involved in my life. I mean, he knows what's going on. I call him regularly, and he knows what's going on in my life. And I need that because as I'm, even though I've been through the steps, even though I have sponsees, believe it or not, I still have difficulty in appraising what's going on in my life and deciding if I owe an amends. I think that I know those things. I really do. And sometimes I might be close. But I'm viewing this thing through rosy-colored glasses. It might be that I'm angry. It might be that I have a history with this person. It might be all sorts of things that are going to go into my line of thinking on whether or not I owe this person an amends. And what I found, to be true today is that I need that third party to be able to look in, somebody to be able to call, actually work the 10th step, and have him tell me, where I was wrong. That's what I need today. You know, when I worked my first fourth step, I remember calling my sponsor and telling him, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to do a fifth step. And he said, okay, you got all the columns completed. And I said, just about. And and he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I got it all completed other than, you know, there's some places I didn't feel like where I wasn't wrong. I didn't put anything in there. And he said, what do you mean exactly? And see, I knew that I had y'all, because y'all would say that, you know, that every place I should be wrong. Well, I had this resentment that I was holding on to since I was a child, that my parents got a divorce when I was young. And you see, I knew that I couldn't be at fault for that. It wasn't my fault, right? You can't tell me. I said, my sponsor, you can't tell me that I was at fault for that. And so I told him that, and he said, well, you're wrong because you've been holding on to that, and this has defined you. You have allowed this resentment to define you for years. You know, you've made decisions based upon this resentment. And there's so many things tied into that. It's the emotional security about what other people think of me because, you know, my mom has a different last name than me now. And all of these sort of things that were running through my head as a child, you know. And I didn't understand it. And that was the first real spiritual awakening that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, was realizing that every time that, you know, every time that I have some pain, that there's something wrong with me that I can look to. And, you know, I love the third step in the big book. I think it's just masterfully written when he talks about the actor trying to direct the show, right? I related so well to that because I do that. I'm, you know, sober. I do that. I want what I want, and I want the end result. And I'll come across very nice to get it. Very, very nice to get it. I'm very kind. I got great motives. But I want what I want, right? And that's the problem with me, you know. That's what I've been able to gain in sobriety, is this understanding that if I keep my nose down, you know, if I keep my nose down and I do what I'm told to do, and when I'm disturbed, you know, I do what it says in the 10th step, you know. It's like, okay, here it is. I'm disturbed. So let me pray, God, remove it. Let me talk to my sponsor. Let me make amends if any amends are owed, and let me go out and try to help somebody. And if I do those things, then it's amazing that, you know, these things, I start to live better, because this is a design for living. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober at 22. I'm 32. I'm 33. I don't remember anymore. I'm sure y'all can relate. You know, for me, it's funny. A sponsee of mine recently came in our house. He walked in and he said, this is the house that AA built. And I thought about that. And it's not necessarily the house that AA built, but this is the life that AA built. There's no question. I mean, what I have today in my life is so full. If y'all would have known me before, if you'd have seen this pathetic person who basically lived to drink, who lived laying on his couch, watching TV, only figuring out where he's going to get his next drink, and just doing the bare minimum just to get by in life, and cursing, waking up the next morning because I wanted to die. And I couldn't imagine life with or without alcohol anymore. And when I look at that person and I look at what you've made me today, it's absolutely amazing. It's nothing short of a miracle. You know, my life today is wonderful. You know, that girlfriend that I met, we've been together for 10 years. We've been married for 5. This will be our fifth year anniversary. We have a 19-month-old little girl. I want to mention this too. I was 4 years into a 4-year degree in college when I was drinking. I think my parents really believed they were about to go to a graduation. And the truth is, I had about a semester completed, is the truth. I was just a very, very good liar. And yeah. And I've been able to go back to school in sobriety. You know, my first sponsor, he told me, he's here this weekend, he told me when I got sober, he said, you know, early on, he's like, you got sober too young not to go back to school. And I was thinking, like, what's he talking about? I just got to get sober right now. But I'm so glad I had people that told me things like that, things I didn't want to hear. I've been able to go back to school. I've been able to get a degree at the same school, you know. The first time, look, when I went back to that school to get that degree, to see if they would, like, even take me back. Thank you. To see if they would take me back, because I didn't know if they would or not. And I'm sitting there waiting to go back. And this guy that's, like, waiting to talk to the counselor had our central office meeting schedule, like, right across from me. And then I walk in the back to go talk to the counselor, and I tell him what's going on. I was like, yeah, I wound up, you know, I wound up having to go to treatment. And he goes, are you in AA? And I said, I am in AA. He said, I was in AA for a long time. Do you know so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? And this is me, like, had all this fear. Couldn't sleep the night before, having to go in and go talk to this counselor at this school that, you know, I did not leave graciously. I had forged doctor's notes, and I mean, it was bad. It was real, real, real bad. I had a lot of fear, and rightly so. You know, but today, I'm able to, you know, be a husband, be a father, be a son. I show up for Mother's Day today. I show up for people's birthdays today. I'm able to, I don't burn up all my sick days right away when I get them at work, right? I mean, I've been able to do all of these things because you showed me how, because of AA. That's it. I learned how to be a productive member of society in people's lives today because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful. And I've heard so many good speakers this weekend that have talked about gratitude being an action. And I do believe that gratitude is not just a word, it's an action. You know, I have to give back to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's very important. I'm so glad to see, you know, I walk down and I see, I'm not sure if y'all have seen all these little stations set up with CPC and PI and treatment and corrections, and you got all these cool little stations down. It says, if you haven't seen it yet, go see. I've been really impressed with what they have going on here. There's a whole lot of work that goes on to make sure that we continue to reach more and more alcoholics. There are people who have not heard of us. There are people who still need to hear the message of AA and are unaware. And there becomes a moment in everybody's sobriety where we do become responsible for the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you stay around long enough, and, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing to give back to this program that has given me a life that I would have never, ever imagined, and definitely not one that I deserve, but one that I owe to you. So thank you.
Wow, thank you. Thank you, Terry. I was just thinking about something you said and something that my sponsor says once in a while, and that's that having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps in step 12, and we don't know of any other program that has a guarantee like that of a real spiritual awakening, but it takes working and stepping through our steps. I was also thinking about the fact that my sobriety date is 9 September 4th, 2005, and maybe I was really stressed out by Katrina, too. That's why I went back out. Except I was in Minnesota. maybe not. Okay, this is going to be good. Our next speaker is Kathy R. From Ohio.
Everybody, my name is Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. And let's see, my sobriety date is August 31st, 2004. My home group is Kennedy Heights Big Book Meeting, Aaron, on Tuesday nights in Cincinnati, Ohio, and where we read the stories also. And let's see, what else am I supposed to say? I always do my math first. This is not my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, so The first time I came to AA, I was sober a couple years, and I did not think I was in the right place. And I went back out, I don't know, maybe for a couple of days or so. And I first came in from my drug use, I thought. And the second time I came to AA, I pretty much did not know what to do. And I stayed sober about 7 years. I tried to do what you told me to do. People were very, very patient with me. And but I'm not so sure I was convinced I was alcoholic. So there were a couple of things going on. My sponsor, who I absolutely loved, there was one woman that I shared with and I talked to. And I'm going to say I do that very differently today, but she was dying from emphysema. So I thought at some point I'm going to drop out of AA because, you know, I thank you very much. And I thought it was something like the Rotary Club or something. And so I stayed sober 7 years. And when I went back out and took that drink, I drank for about 7 years. So I always say I have a real healthy respect for the phenomena of craving. I really didn't think that I could get sober again. And let me just also thank the committee. I kind of jumped into my story because 20 minutes is 20 minutes. But I just would like to thank the committee for asking me to speak because this is a tremendous honor for a drunk like me who couldn't even once I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I could not stay sober. So, and this is my first international convention. And let me just say, it is the most amazing thing. Oh my God, it's just so awesome. And before I came here, I knew I was speaking today, and, you know, that was kind of like, okay, I can do that, because I always try to say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous. But what I didn't know when I accepted that invitation is I was really, and by the time I got here, I was really needing something from AA. And I am one of those chicks that you know, knows what it's like to be like at the bottom of your sobriety and have everything depend on what is being said in that meeting. And, you know, thank God I live in Cincinnati, which is just a pocket of enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God. And thank God also for the meeting that was held the first day I got here, and it was entitled African Americans, the African American Experience in AA. And just because of some things going on in our country, I felt that I really got a lot out of that meeting, and it probably changed my sobriety. And I love AA because if I take that one more action, that always happens. It always happens, and I'm so grateful. I don't know. I was thinking why they asked me to speak on this panel. I do have a working knowledge of the 12 steps, but I said, did they ask me because I've been in and out so many times, or, you know, what's going on with that? And, you know, I guess the best I can come up with is I have had to work the 12 steps over and over again because I'm such a resentful chick. You know, and I guess Terry and I have that in common. Maybe that's the theme. I don't know. Veronica, I'll have to confirm. But I am just such a resentful chick. And from where in the neighborhood I come from, they call it a hateful bee. And I was so angry when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And like I said, there were hardly any women that I talked to. just because I just didn't like them, you know. I don't know. And then I went back out for those 7 years, and it taught me about my alcoholism. I pretty much worked the first step maybe 2 years before I got sober. I knew I was alcoholic. And for 2 years, my pride would not allow me to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous because of a huge resentment I had. Well, a few huge resentments. And that kept me drinking a couple years longer. And then I didn't even know I was coming back. I mean, I just pretty much owe my sobriety to Phyllis D. And she was at the treatment center that I was in, and she brought me back to Alcoholics Anonymous, literally held my hand and said, "You meet me here." And I had nothing else to do, no other plans, and I met her. And that was the beginning of my sobriety. So I pretty much thought, and I didn't really have a lot of use for people in AA when I first got sober this time, because I'd been to some AA meetings, and I knew some alcoholics. And, but I knew that you all were staying sober and that there was a spiritual component here that I needed, you know. And really, it wasn't until I was a couple years sober. When I got sober, my daughter was 10 years old, and she was very much the mother. It was just her and I, and we lived together, and she was very much the mother. And when I got sober, the roles kind of reversed, and she pretty much started rebelling. Well, she just lost her man. I'm not gonna pretty it up. You know, she just lost her man. And you know, when I met my sponsor that I have today, my daughter and I had gotten into a physical altercation, and she was really fighting me. You know, I was just keeping her off of me. And but I can't beat her. But anyway, I called my sponsor, and I was in tears, and I was 2 years sober, and she thought I was drinking. That's how devastated I was. So that came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. For me, you know, it was the spiritual component, but it was also a power greater than me was you all and my sponsor, because I clearly could not stay sober on my own, and you all were clearly staying sober. And my sponsor, I pretty much, and she is the one that gets everything. And, you know, I'm a big believer in sponsorship, and I'm a big believer in telling her everything, particularly now because my sponsor lives in New York and I live in Cincinnati. So I'm sponsored long distance. And if I'm not willing to tell her what's really going on, you know, I might as well just take a drink right now, you know. I talk to her usually once a week unless there's something really major going on. And I'm here to tell you, you can move a guy in and out within a week's time. For sure. So, just to know what you're dealing with. Just so you know. I don't know. I had done a lot of inventories when I was sober before, and you know, I had a stack of inventories because that's what we do, you know, when we're trying to stay sober, and you know, and you're as resentful as I was, you know, you got to write about it. So I knew how to, you know, write about it and set up the columns and what my part is, and you know, I had made a lot of amends, and I had worked with others, And my idea about working with others was that you get your entourage together and you make them go to the meetings you go to. And you, that's working with others. You know, you tell them to do the steps. And I know how to do that because I've been doing that. And, you know, I don't know. And I just need to say, if I would have continued to do that, I probably would not have had to go back out. Even in that vein, if I had continued to work Alcoholics Anonymous in that manner, I probably would have stayed sober. But those women weren't doing nothing I said do. They were some of the most independent alcoholics I had ever seen. And then a lot of things happened. You know, I met a guy. There's always a guy in my story. I don't know. And, you know, I had my daughter, and we were both AA legal. We were both sober over a year. I always say even though I worked the 12 steps in that kind of competitive way, I was very competitive too. Like, you can't get to the new girl before me, I bet you can. You know, I was like that, just obnoxious. But even though I worked the steps in that manner, I always say you can effectively unwork the 12 steps. And that's exactly what I did. You know, after I had my daughter, I stopped doing my institution meeting, and I stopped taking as many of those phone calls from those women. And you know what I mean? I just didn't think it was so important to even show up at meetings anymore. And so I knew what to do when I got sober. Now, I wasn't sure if it was going to work again. Because in my mind, sobriety was like a one-shot deal. Like, I had my shot, I messed it up, and I just got to live this miserable drinking life. And luckily, because of the grace and mercy of a higher power, you know, I could not have been more wrong about that. So when I got sober this time, I did an inventory, and I pretty much did everything. I did all my resentments, but until I realized when I was a couple years sober, I never wrote about my daughter's father. Matter of fact, I was just acting like he did not exist. He was from Lexington, and he had kind of disappeared when my daughter was a year old. And I just, in my mind, and this is how delusional I can be, and this is why I need the 12 steps. In my mind, he just didn't exist. So it wasn't even like it was a resentment. It was like, he gone, you know? I don't know, but the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a friend of mine, Angie P. in Cincinnati, she goes all over doing this speaking in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she found my daughter's father in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and when he surfaced in our lives, I just could not sleep. And I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. And one Saturday morning, I woke up and I realized right away what it was. I took out some paper and I wrote about 3 or 4 pages about him. And I called my sponsor up and I was like, you know what? I owe him an amends, because there was this little incident where I tried to stab him. And, you know, I just thought maybe I owe him an amends. So anyway, I did make that amends, and I'm so grateful I did. You know, I'm so grateful. And we became great friends after that, you know. And my daughter, like, if he would do something, and my daughter would say, well, Ma, you did try to stab him. And I'm like, yeah, I forgot. So, I don't know. you know, I made amends, and this time for a lot of my behavior, but my amends pretty much today are living amends for that daughter that I was just a horrible mother to. Just trying to be the best mother that I know how to be. And she's a lot like me, though. You know, she's a lot like me. So I've also been doing some steps in the program of Al-Anon. I don't know. Yay, some Al-Anons. All right. But when I got my sponsor, she absolutely insists that we work with women, and I thought that was a bad idea because I know how you alcoholic women are. You do what you want. You don't do anything I say. And, you know, I just thought that was a bad idea, and I was explaining this to her, like trying to get a pass. But, you know, she said, I said, well, I don't really know what to do because truthfully, though, I've done a lot of things in the guise of working with an alcoholic that are not written in our book. You know what I mean? So she literally made me take the book out, and she said, well, Kathy, there's a chapter. They wrote a whole chapter on it, and she's like that. And I said, oh, okay, you know, and I literally went through the chapter of working with others. And if you do that sentence by sentence, it kind of says, these are the things we do and these are the things we don't do. And I wrote them down. I have that list today, you know, and that was the beginning for me. Just, you know, just knowing what our program says rather than what I think I need to be doing. Because truly, in the early days, some girl had me standing on my car, climbing into her apartment that who knows if she really even lived there. You know what I mean? Just trying to help this alcoholic. And, you know, I was like, wait a minute. You know, it just felt kind of weird as I was going through the window. So, you know, I need to know what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous says. And luckily for me, they did write it down. So, I don't know. I just have been given this amazing life because of AA. And I always try to say yes whenever I can because of my life that I've been given with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have, my dad is still living. I'm from a family, we're fighters, you know what I mean? I grew up fighting, and, you know, sometimes I fight today. You know, I don't know if they ask me to speak because, you know, I'm still sober and I do so much of the wrong thing, you know? I don't know, I probably did, like, at least two or three wrong things today. You know, but, and I'd like to try stuff. You know, I'm a try stuff girl. I'm a stove toucher. You know, I want to see if it's hot. Is it hot for real? You know, that is my personality. And I mean, I can probably work these steps inside and out. And that personality trait is probably not going to change. But luckily for me, there's a solution because of a loving God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to be miserable. You know, I grew up in this fighting family, not physically fighting because we way too proper for that, but not physically fighting, but emotionally fighting. And when my mother was the age that I am right now, she wound up taking her own life because she was just tired of fighting. You know, I know that's me. I'm more like my mother than my dad. And, you know, I just am so grateful that I have a solution to life that works in every area. You know, this conference, I was thinking, I'm going to tell this story, this recent story. I was thinking, like, last week. I don't know if I want to come here. You know what I mean? I pay my money, but it's going to be a lot of people. And, you know, I was saying in the bathroom today, I'm so glad I no longer listen to me. You know, I am so glad and so grateful because this has been the most amazing experience for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always known people that came to the international conference and I could never afford it. And, you know, I've been coming to Atlanta since I was born. My people are from here. So, you know, I could probably drive down 75 in my sleep and get here, you know, because we've been doing that the whole time. So, you know, to miss it, and I'm into first, so that's why I decided to come. But I would have missed this whole experience. And luckily, you know, that measure of willingness has carried me so far in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just being willing to go to one more meeting, talk about the guy one more time, you know, call my sponsor and tell the truth. And, you know, just pick the girl up and put her in the car, literally. You know, when I was 5 years sober, my sponsor moved to New York. And I started picking up women at the treatment facility in Cincinnati because I thought I might drink. You know, I wasn't sure if I really did have a higher power other than my sponsor. But luckily for me, the program of AA works, and I am very, very grateful.
Wow. Thank you, Kathy. On our topic of taking the steps again, you rocked it, and thank you. Our final speaker is Veronica E. from Felton, Delaware.
Okay. Good afternoon. You're still awake? We're getting down to the end here. My name is Veronica. I am an alcoholic. How many of you know where Delaware is? All right, thank you. We're on a peninsula, and you can skip us really easy if you don't really want to get into Delaware. But I'm from Delaware. My father was a military person, and there's an Air Force base in Dover. So that's how I got to Delaware from Nebraska. So I've been fortunate to move around the country and see a lot of the country, and that was very helpful. Being an alcoholic, I learned to fit in, right? I learned how to get in, get out, not be attached to people, because, you know, I'm only going to be there for a year or two as a kid, and I'm never going to see these people again, and that suits me just fine. So my home group is Fresh Air. We were the first non-smoking group back in 89, and I didn't join that group to 1990, I have to say. And so my sobriety date is May 15th, 1990. I celebrated 25 years this year, and I was, you know, we have to talk a little bit. And I said, well, at our state convention, you're old timers if you're 25 years sober. So I made that. And I said, but, you know, I'm going to the international, and you have to be 50 years before you're considered an old-timer, so I guess I'm not halfway there yet. So I really, you know, I'm so grateful to be here. We were all talking about speaking, and we were so glad we were in a nice little room instead of one of those huge rooms, but you guys did a great job filling it up. So anyway, how'd I get here? I actually started in Al-Anon. my service position currently is delegate for Area 12, and I spoke at the, you know, convention and gave our report, and I told the Al-Anon people they could be an AA delegate too someday. So you never know where you're going to start, where you're going to finish up. But I showed up in Al-Anon in 83 with one point in mind. If I was an Al-Anon, he was the alcoholic. I married somebody who was about 20 years older than I, and he was about 20 years ahead of his drinking than I was. So it was very easy for me to compare myself, and I didn't drink like he did, so, you know, he had to be the alcoholic. But part of the reason I married him was because he did drink, and it made it okay for me to drink. And the reason for that was because I grew up in a family where there was no drinking. And that was because my mother's father was the town drunk, and he died in a sanitarium back before my sister Mary was born in 48 with a wet brain and diapers. So when we were growing up and we'd go back to West Virginia, there was always the story about Grandpa Himes, who burned down two homes and a family business. And with 12 kids, Grandma was on welfare. And the last thing you wanted to be was an alcoholic. Oof, gives me chills still. So I always heard terrible stories about alcoholics, and I always, of course, pictured them to be somebody like my grandfather. So as I grew up, though, you know how life is, I was always attracted to the people down the pool hall. you know, used to walk the streets and pick up the cigarette butts so we could have them to smoke and look cool when we went to the pool hall. It's a good thing I left town every year. Ended up in, you know, another state, and, you know, I'd show up down at the bowling alley where the alley cats were at. They were the chain gangs with the leather jackets and, you know, motorcycles. They were my kind of people. I grew up going to Catholic schools, and so I learned very early how to live the double life. And everybody would always say to me, oh, you're so sweet. And I'd say, boy, if you really knew what was going on. But I learned to keep that part of me quiet. And so that's, you know, what I did. I learned those kinds of skills really early. I always hung out with people who were older than I was because they could get for me what I couldn't get for myself. And so I ended up with my first boyfriend, who was 2 years older than me, played in a band. And we could go to the base, Air Force Base there, and the Airmen's Club, and they could drink at 18. I could sit in there with him, and we could have a couple drinks. Because, you know, you're on base. Who cares? So anyway, I knew I didn't love him, but I wanted to get the hell out of the house. So that sounded like a good idea to me. My mother was very controlling because she was always watching me, And, you know, when I go out, she'd say, now, Veronica, when you go someplace, you know, you just put one of those little lemons or one of those oranges in your drink and nobody will know you're not drinking. And I think, oh, my God, spare me. So came time for college, and I was dating this young man, and I wanted to go to the University of Delaware, and she didn't want me to go because she thought I was too immature. So so I got a little bit of a scholarship at Delaware State University, which was a historically black school. And I said, okay, I'll fix her. I'll stay on campus. And I was the only white girl on campus when the revolution was on. And I would walk through the dorms. They'd call me honky, rabbit, you know, white girl. I really didn't know what they were calling me. I was like, who are they talking to? So anyway, you know, the semester came around and open dorms started, you know, where the boys and the girls could come in. So, of course, my mother pulled me home, and I said, okay, I'm getting married. She's not controlling my life. So I did that and, you know, lived with that young first husband for about 7 years. And like I said, I knew I didn't love him. And but I thought I'd learned to love him. See, I couldn't form attachments to people. So, you know, I didn't know how to do that. So I didn't know what love was. I thought I might grow to love him. But I realized that it wasn't to be. So I got divorced from him and found myself a real alcoholic, which was the second husband. And like I said, he was 20 years older, and he could get a lot more for me than I could get for myself. And so we were going to live life high and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So it didn't turn out that way, needless to say. I showed up at Al-Anon. If I was an Al-Anon, he had to be the alcoholic. God works in strange ways. There's no question about it. And the thing that was so helpful to me in Al-Anon was that you know, it's okay to be an alcoholic. And I had always heard it was terrible to be an alcoholic, you know, and that they were sick people, and that, you know, that there was the dilemma of the alcoholic marriage, that if both of us, you know, don't have to go down with the ship. Because I thought, you know, he was 20 years old and I was going to have to go down with the ship with him. So I got rid of him, and I learned to put the focus on myself, okay? That was key for me, because, you know, as an alcoholic, it's everybody else's fault. You know, if I wasn't my mother, it wasn't the first husband, it wasn't the second husband, okay, who is it? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Where I worked in my job, somebody was doing alcoholic counseling, and they actually gave me a book on alcoholism, the big book. That was my first big book. I took it home, and I opened it to the chapter, To the Wives. And again, I'm the wife, he's the alcoholic. So anyway, you know, got pretty bad. We had a daughter, and, you know, still sends chills up my back. I don't care how many times I tell the story. Because, as we all know, how grateful we are to be here. And, you know, you realize you've lived that double life in more ways than one. So, thank you. That's my 5-minute warning. No. So, anyway, you know, it got to the point that I got divorced from him. And, you know, some of the things that really brought my alcoholism to the head was that we were fighting over custody. And, you know, he was showing up at the custody saying I was an unfit mother. And, you know, I said, okay, I'll fix him, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I remember going to Al-Anon one time. I came home from that meeting, and I was going to take a baseball bat and fix him. And it was it was a good thing I was in Al-Anon, because, truly, I called that Al-Anon sponsor, and I said, I'm going to kill him, you know. Because that's how angry I was. So, you know, I'd been in Al-Anon for a number of years, got rid of that husband, so I've been working the steps. Isn't that what this topic is, working the steps? Continue to work the steps.
Taking the steps.
And I had taken the steps, and I had done a step 4. And it was him. It was, and then I left him. I joined Adult Children of Alcoholics. I did a step 4 on my mother. And then after I got rid of that step 4, I joined OA. I wanted to be anything but an alcoholic. I was showing at the counselors. They were giving me mother's little helpers to occasionally wash down with the alcohol. But, you know, I think this song, somebody was talking about a song, so one of the others speaking. The song that I identified with and when I was in high school was the Rolling Stones, Paint It Black. If you don't know the lyrics for that one, it says, I see a red door and I want to paint it black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black. I see the girls go by dressed in their summer clothes and I want them, you know, no colors anymore. And that was the way my life was going. So while I was going to these other 12-step programs, there was always a damn alcoholic that showed up. And I knew those traditions. You're only supposed to talk about, you know, single purpose. But they would always cozy up to me. They'd say, come on, Veronica, come to an AA meeting. And I'm like, what would I do that for? So there weren't a lot of Al-Anon meetings. There weren't a lot of OA meetings. There weren't a lot of alcoholic adult children meetings. Thank God. So I showed up at an AA meeting. And I sat back in the back of the room, and I knew a lot of those alcoholics because I'd seen their spouses and their family members. I was taking their inventory big time. But and I couldn't still identify with alcohol as my problem, but I could identify with unmanageability. And I could really identify with, came to believe that power could restore me to sanity, because I knew I was at that level of true insanity. I hated going to mental health people because I had to lie to them, too, you know? We drink on a lie. You know, I'm not hurting anybody. I deserve it. I deserve it. I work hard. I'm taking care of this brat kid, and I'm showing up at work. I deserve it. And I'm not hurting anybody. So anyway, I showed up to a lot of those AA meetings, and finally, by the grace of God, you know, my name is Veronica, alcoholic. because I knew the moment I let those words slip from my lips, I could not take them back. And I love that line in the big book that says, when I swallowed that one bit of truth about myself, that I could rebuild my life. And that's what AA has done for me, to rebuild my life. I have to continue taking the steps. I loved this topic because, you know, taking the steps. But we have to take them over and over and over again. I've taken them so many times. But I do, you know, go to a lot of meetings. I've had the opportunity. I'm serving currently as Area 12 panel. I told you that, doing a lot of service work. I tell you what, if you're not doing the steps, working step 10 especially, while you're doing service work, you're in big trouble. You're not going to last long. But it's such a growing opportunity. That's the thing I love about AA, is a growing opportunity. You know, we stay sober based on the maintenance of our spiritual program so that we can grow. And, you know, it's not about stagnation. It's about growth. Today, like I said, as a parent, I was a basically good parent. I bathed my kid. I fed her. I clothed her. I got her to school. It was a good way for me to get away from her, get her to school, get her here, get her there, drop her off. I heard somebody say they wanted the nights to never end. I cherished the nights because I stayed up all night just so I could be by myself, you know, get that drink in at night till I passed out. My daughter had a very serious car accident. And she's now quadriplegic, and her husband died. And I was right back into that point, an early alcoholism, where she was ruining my life. I had to now put my life on hold for her again. I did it once. She's now 32. And, you know, she didn't have her seatbelt on, you know? Now, that's a resentment. But I had to, you know, take those steps again. I had to take those steps again. We had to live with her in her home for a couple of years. We were able to, you know, man, she lives in her home self now in a handicapped home. But it threw me right back into that selfish self-centeredness that I was afraid she was going to swallow me up again. And when I was getting sober, I resented her so much because I couldn't get to AA meetings. And so I always identify with young mothers who come in with several children and people are saying 90 meetings, 90 days. And I'll go, honey, just use the phone. Because it's hard for early mothers to get to 90 meetings in 90 days. And but you still do need to talk to that sponsor. And, you know, we need to really support those young women who have children. You know, men, God bless you. I love you guys, truly. I really do. And I, you know, again, I love the difference between the men and women. But, you know, they just like they went to the bar out every night. They can get sober on their own, attend as many meetings as they want. But the women really have to work doubly hard. And I like that point in the big book that says alcohol takes women a lot faster than it takes men. And I've come to realize for myself that women are more emotional. So it takes us a little longer to get sober, to get sane. So I appreciate you guys being patient with us. And I really wanted to say this. I wanted to thank the ladies who let me in the bathroom so I could get here on time. We have a little more challenge, but it makes it all worthwhile. One of the reasons I like this topic, taking the steps, is because, you know, we talk about 1, 2, 3, and 9, and we read the 9th step promises, and we never really get into 10, 11, and 12 much. And, you know, the 12 and 12 tells us that we do the work in 1 through 9, but 10, 11, and 12 are the living steps. And in those living steps, you know, we have to continue to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And a lot of people don't understand that. They think step 10 stands alone. But really, steps 1 through 9, I have found, were practice steps. You only did it you did it one time, but you get to do it over and over and over again in step 10. And the 10th step promises are my favorite promises because it says, insanity will return. because I was an insane person. I was an insane person. And I used to identify, you remember that movie Sybil that had like 13? I identified with her. I really thought that's what they should be treating me for, because I functioned in blackouts. And so I really like that sanity will return. I will react sanely and normally. Now, somebody used to tell me normal was the setting on the washing machine. I'm glad they don't say that anymore. Normal is my life, whatever it is, you know. It's just today, one day at a time. I like that it says that we'll be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Thank God for that. Thank God for that. I don't care how many years I get sober, people keep saying, why do you keep coming back? Because when I sit in those meetings, I feel safe and protected. There is insanity out the world. No question about it, but I don't have to be part of it today. I like the warnings on step 10, you know. You know, you don't, what does it say? We won't be fooled to think that we're going to always be in spiritual condition. So we have to, you know, continue to work on that with step 11. And I really am grateful just for being here, because I will continue. I always say I am tickled to be here, because when you tickle me, I feel you. Because, you know, I was one of those drunks that liked to just be numbed out. And I'm tickled to be here. Thanks.